Okay, let's unpack this. You've shared some fascinating material about the Supreme Court case, FEC v. Ted Cruz for Senate.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one.
This deep dive is going to cut through the legal jargon and get right to the core of what this case means for how campaigns are financed and, well, the fundamental role of free speech in our elections.
Exactly.
We've got the facts, the legal arguments, and the justices' decisions laid out so you can quickly grasp the significance of this ruling.
And what's fascinating here is how this case throws a spotlight on that constant tension in campaign finance law. You know,
Yeah.
we're always trying to balance the constitutional right to free expression with the practical need to maintain a political process that the public trusts.
Right.
This case really forces us to grapple with where that balance should be struck.
Absolutely. So let's get into the setup. Back in 2018, Senator Cruz loaned his campaign $260,000.
Okay.
Now, there was this federal law on the books that limited the repayment of a candidate's personal loans exceeding $250,000 with post-election contributions.
Right, that's the key limit.
And here's where it gets really interesting. Senator Cruz intentionally kept $10,000 of that loan unpaid past a specific deadline, specifically to set the stage for challenging this very law. I mean, you have to wonder, why go to all that trouble?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, you see a very deliberate legal strategy at play.
Okay.
The campaign was aware of this $250,000 limit and knowingly went over it, then didn't repay the excess within the 20-day window.
Deliberately.
Deliberately. This created a tangible situation where they could argue they were directly harmed by the law, which is, you know, a prerequisite for bringing a legal challenge.
Right, you need that injury.
It was a calculated move designed to test the boundaries of campaign finance regulations.
Right, and this brings up a really important legal concept, standing.
Yeah, absolutely fundamental.
The court had to determine if Senator Cruz even had the right to bring this case, considering he essentially engineered the situation. What was the court's reasoning on that?
Well, this raises a fundamental question about access to the courts. Generally, you need to demonstrate a direct injury to have legal standing. The FEC argued that Senator Cruz's injury was self-inflicted and therefore shouldn't count.
Made sense on the surface, maybe.
Yeah, you could see their point. However, the court disagreed, pointing to established precedent that allows individuals to challenge the constitutionality of a law, even if they intentionally act in a way that brings the law into play.
Ah, so there's history there.
Exactly. The crucial point here is that the $10,000 loan that couldn't be repaid with post-election funds was a direct consequence of the law's existence. So the court said he had standing to sue.
Okay, so they cleared that procedural hurdle. Now we get to the core of the matter, the clash between free speech and the effort to prevent corruption.
The main event.
The central question, as I understand it, was whether this limit on repaying candidate loans violated the First Amendment, which of course protects free speech. What were the key arguments on this front?
Precisely. The argument against the law, which ultimately swayed the majority, hinged on the idea that this kind of restriction could discourage individuals, particularly those without maybe established fundraising networks, from loaning their campaigns money in the first place.
Okay, the chilling effect argument.
That's it. The thinking is that if a candidate can't be reasonably assured they can recoup their personal investment through post-election donations, they might be less inclined to make that initial loan.
Makes intuitive sense.
Yeah. And this could then restrict a candidate's ability to effectively communicate their message to voters, which is, you know, a core tenet of political speech.
Right.
So the argument is that this cap has a chilling effect on political expression. The majority's core insight here was that limiting loan repayment unconstitutionally chills political speech by deterring candidates, demanding really irrefutable proof of quid pro quo corruption to justify such a restriction.
That makes sense. Less financial backing for a campaign could indeed translate to a diminished ability to advertise, organize events, and generally engage with the electorate. So, what was the majority view on this potential restriction of speech?
Chief Justice Roberts penned the majority opinion, and the court sided with Senator Cruz. They agreed that the limit did place a burden on political speech by potentially deterring candidates from making those personal loans.
Okay.
To justify such a burden on a constitutionally protected right, the court reaffirmed its long-standing position that the government must demonstrate the law is narrowly tailored to serve a compelling government interest.
The usual test.
Exactly. In the realm of campaign finance, that compelling interest is typically the prevention of quid pro quo corruption, you know, a direct exchange of financial support for specific political favors.
That specific kind of corruption.
Right. This is legal shorthand for saying the government's rule has to be a precise solution to a very important problem without being overly broad or restrictive on other rights.
And in this instance, did the court believe the government had provided sufficient evidence of that direct link to quid pro quo corruption?
Not according to the majority. The court found the evidence presented by the FEC attempting to link this specific loan repayment limit to the prevention of actual quid pro quo corruption to be, well, unconvincing.
So the proof wasn't there for them.
They essentially said, where's the concrete proof that this particular regulation is actually stopping that kind of explicit bribery? The majority also dismissed the argument that repaying a candidate's loan after the election amounted to a personal gift or some form of improper personal enrichment.
How did they reason that?
They reasoned that loans, by their very nature, are intended to be repaid. Pretty straightforward.
Okay.
Furthermore, the court highlighted that most states do not have similar restrictions on repaying candidate loans.
Oh, interesting comparison.
And there's no widespread evidence of corruption arising from that lack of regulation at the state level. This state-level comparison certainly makes you consider whether the federal rule was a solution in search of a significant problem.
That's a really interesting point about the state-level experience. It does prompt you to question the necessity of the federal regulation. But Justice Kagan and the dissenting justices had a very different perspective, right?
Yes. Justice Kagan's dissenting opinion presented a starkly contrasting view. Her key insight in dissent was that the appearance of corruption and the erosion of public trust are compelling government interests themselves.
Not just the actual act.
Exactly. Warranting a more proactive, sort of prophylactic approach to campaign finance regulation.
Okay.
She argued that this kind of post-election loan repayment undeniably creates a significant risk of corruption, or at the very least, a strong perception of it.
The optics argument?
Precisely. Her reasoning was quite straightforward. Consider large donations pouring in after an election, specifically to repay the candidate's personal loans. It could very easily appear as though those donors are attempting to curry favor with the newly elected official, essentially buying influence after the fact.
Yeah, I can see that perception.
So to be clear, Justice Kagan wasn't necessarily saying there was direct bribery happening, but that this setup creates a situation where it looks like it could, and that's a problem in itself, right?
Right. It's that issue of public perception. Even if you can't definitively prove a direct quid pro quo exchange, the optics of large post-election loan repayments certainly raise questions about potential influence.
Exactly. Justice Kagan emphasized that maintaining public confidence in the integrity of our elections is itself a vital government interest.
Mm-hmm.
She pointed to evidence the FEC had accumulated over time, suggesting potential connections between these kinds of post-election loan repayments and political favors.
So there was some evidence, just maybe not direct quid pro quo.
Right, maybe circumstantial or suggesting a pattern. She felt the majority was taking an overly narrow view by focusing solely on direct quid pro quo corruption, and wasn't giving sufficient weight to the broader concerns about the appearance of corruption and the potential for undue influence.
Got it.
She also contended that Congress, in passing this law, was acting reasonably to put in place a prophylactic rule, a preventative measure to mitigate a known risk. In her view, the majority should have given more deference to Congress's judgment on this issue.
So it really comes down to a fundamental disagreement on the level of proof required to justify a restriction on campaign finance.
Yeah.
And the degree of importance to assign to the potential appearance of corruption, as opposed to only requiring direct evidence of it.
Precisely. The majority established a very high bar, demanding clear evidence of quid pro quo corruption directly linked to the repayment of candidate loans with post-election funds. The dissent, on the other hand, argued that the potential for influence and the erosion of public trust are significant harms in themselves, and that Congress acted reasonably in trying to address that risk proactively.
Okay, so what does this all mean for you, the listener, and for the broader landscape of campaign finance going forward?
Well, the immediate impact is that candidates now have considerably more leeway to loan their campaigns personal funds.
More freedom there.
With the assurance that they can be repaid with contributions raised after the election without being limited by that $250,000 threshold.
Okay.
This could be particularly advantageous for candidates who may lack access to traditional funding sources, but are willing to invest their own money to get their message out to voters.
But it does feel like this ruling could potentially create some ethical ambiguities, doesn't it?
It certainly raises questions.
While the court focused on the absence of direct evidence of quid pro quo corruption, the potential for the appearance of impropriety is certainly increased. Imagine a scenario where a candidate barely wins an election and then receives a significant influx of post-election donations specifically earmarked to repay their personal loans, often from individuals or entities with vested interest in the newly elected officials' decisions.
Right, that's the concern.
It certainly raises ethical questions, even if it doesn't meet the court's strict definition of a direct quid pro quo exchange. It really makes you think about the incentives at play.
That's absolutely right. This case is another clear signal that the court is applying a very stringent level of scrutiny to campaign finance regulations, prioritizing the protection of political speech under the First Amendment.
The trend continues.
It seems so. Unless the government can present compelling and direct evidence that a regulation is narrowly tailored to prevent actual explicit corruption, the direct cash for favor scenario, it's likely to face significant legal challenges.
Hopefully this deep dive has given you a clear understanding of FEC v. Cruz. You can see how this case touches on fundamental aspects of our legal system. The balance between free speech and the effort to maintain a fair political process, and even the nitty-gritty of legal standing.
All wrapped up in one case.
This raises a really important question. With fewer restrictions on post-election loan repayments, what new dynamics might we observe in campaign finance, and how might that ultimately shape the political landscape? It's definitely something to keep mulling over.